Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's compassionate and caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its liberating, enriching, and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion at any time over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. It is always my pleasure on Fridays to welcome a good friend, a man I have an enormous amount of respect for, a man who is, in my view, the most effective spokesperson relative to the religion of Islam. He is IQ al-Rasuli. He has written two books. It's called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy his books by going to Amazon.com. IQ, how are you today?
Thank you.
I want to share with you a concluding statement that I made in our news hour yesterday. And I would like you to please feel free to correct anything that I may have said that is either inadequate or inaccurate. It was in response to a Republican senator, one who flew missions over Iraq, meaning he was one who dropped bombs on Iraq during the war. And he said, we are now at a moment that if we fail to do the right thing, we could make the situation in Iraq far worse. The American invasion of Iraq, I wrote and said yesterday, and Afghanistan led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not a million civilians in both nations. It led to the annihilation of Iraqi Christians, reducing the population by 80%. 6,000 American lives were squandered in George Bush's counterproductive war. And another 150,000 American GIs took their own lives when they returned home, committing suicide because they couldn't compartmentalize the grotesque immorality they perpetrated and they witnessed on orders of their politicians and generals. The invasion squandered up to $4 trillion, bankrupting the American nation. It destroyed two countries, leaving them in ruins. The war against terrorism increased terrorism exponentially. It ignited a civil war in Iraq and in Syria. It removed the secular dictator who was successful fighting Islamic fundamentalism, one who fought Iran to a stalemate. With Saddam Hussein gone, Americans facilitated the creation of an Iranian Shiite government in Iraq, ostensibly giving Iraq to Iran. This is what led to and caused the Syrian civil war, the Shiite-Sunni proxy war that is spreading across the Middle East. Worse, Sunnis are now murdering Shia with American weapons by the tens of thousands, and their goal is to establish a unified Islamic caliphate and from it to conquer the rest of the world. But should they fail, let us not lose sight of the fact that with Russia and China on one side and the U.S. and Europe on the other, the unstoppable and irresolvable, the counterproductive and suicidal war America caused inevitably will serve as the throttling catalyst for World War III. Besides that, how did you like the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
I can't add to it. I can't subtract from it. It's accurate. This is exactly what's happening. This
catastrophic. Is exactly what's happening. Catastrophic on every possible level.
Yeah. And to say that they are interfering again in Iraq is outrageous, utterly stupid. Iraq is not going to be solved by American intervention, ever. It will never be solved by Russian or Chinese or European intervention. Iraq is part and parcel of a dysfunctional society called Islam. All of them. All 57 Muslim majority states are dysfunctional. What do I mean by dysfunctional? They cannot understand the concept of democracy. They have no understanding or appreciation of freedom. Freedom of religion, freedom of thought, freedom of expression. They don't have. How is America going to help Iraq in any way, shape or form, short of another input of destruction and death? And it is counterproductive anyway.
Maximum. You're right. Yeah, no, you're right. It's astonishing. The reality is that Islam cannot provide a Muslim with a reason to live. They only give Muslims a reason to die. And in that culture, particularly when you have a large minority populations, as is the case of Iraq. Iraq is the absolute worst place for us to have removed a secular dictator, because in Iraq you had four factions. You had the majority, which were Shia Muslims, a minority, but a large minority of Sunni Muslims, and then you had the Kurds, who want no part of either Iraqi or Iranian or Turkish politics. They just want to be left alone. And, of course, there was a very substantial Christian population. It's no more. And so with Islam being wholly intolerant, not only of those who are not Muslims, but of other sects of Islam, how is it remotely possible that these people, particularly armed with sophisticated weapons, were going to do anything other than just bludgeon one another to death?
Yes, but after bludgeoning each other, they are going to bludgeon us in the West. It's only the beginning. The terrorists in Syria, it is estimated there are 17,000 non-Syrian terrorists in there. When those people come back to Europe and America, and many of them are from Europe and America, Muslims, of course.
Right.
I promise you, I'm not predicting the future as if I'm a prophet. No, no, no. I'm telling you it's going to happen. You are going to have massive destruction in both Europe and America, internally.
Yeah. You know, it's I'm not a prophet either, IQ. And yet, before America invaded Iraq, I predicted everything that we have witnessed over the last 12 years. Everything. Everything that I've said on 3,000 radio interviews in the UK, Canada, the United States, and in various places around the world. Everything that I wrote turned out to occur exactly as I said it would. Everything. And I'm not a prophet. All you have to do to be able to predict the future, to know what's going to happen, is to understand the forces that are at play. And in that part of the world, there's only one force that matters, Islam. And once you understand Islam, you recognize that there was a 0% possibility of making Iraq better by deposing Saddam Hussein.
Nor did they make Libya better by deposing Gaddafi or by deposing Mubarak. I mean, this is unbelievable. These leaders of ours in Europe and America, they are supposed to be intelligent human beings. But I promise you, not because you and I are geniuses, not at all. They are the most stupid people on the planet. Because they are bringing humanity, as you said, to World War III. We are heading to it. There's no question about it. As you said, Europe and America on one side, Russia, China on the other side. And who's in the middle? Christians and civilians, whether they're Christian or not.
Right. And we brought this on ourselves. For the last 4 days, IQ, all I've talked about is the worsening conditions in Iraq and how they have America's invasion brought them to this point and is leading us to the precipice of World War III. And I've done so because this is the ultimate teaching moment, the ultimate awakening moment, for us to realize that the disaster that we created in Iraq is now responsible for nearly 10,000 civilian deaths in Iraq this year. or this past year, as well as now the entire province of Iraq, and a huge swath of territory in Iraq, now being wholly under the control of Sunni fundamentalist terrorists, and now a open civil war between the Shiites and the Sunnis there in Iraq, just as we have a civil war between Shiites and Sunnis in Syria. This it's not resolvable. We created a mess that we can't fix. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't understand how we got to this place so that we don't continue to do the wrong thing. For example, the senator wants to send more weapons to the Shiite government. If we continue to do the wrong thing, if we don't learn how we got into this mess, how we created this mess, all we're doing is hastening our own destruction.
But the tragedy is nobody has learned anything. Yada, not an iota. When America leaves Afghanistan, 3 years ago I said the Taliban would take over within 1 month, or even less than a month. The moment America leaves Afghanistan, Taliban will take over instantly. Karzai will leave Afghanistan with his family and live somewhere in Europe or America with billions of dollars stolen from American taxpayers.
Correct. And they're going to leave him alone because he has aided and abetted the Taliban's return ever since he's been in power.
Well, why are we, not we, I mean you and I and there are quite a few other people. Okay, there are not many people, very few people. Why are we awake and realistic and yet our leaders are completely comatose? I don't know, I can't figure it out.
Yeah, well, even in, you mentioned Afghanistan, and then I want to speak to Iraq, which is an area you understand because you are an Iraqi. Although you no longer live there, that's where you were born and raised. The as it relates to the Taliban in Afghanistan, the Taliban in Afghanistan is a division of the Pakistani ISI, their secret service, which is a division of the Pakistani army, which is a division of the Pakistani government. And we know this because we rented the Taliban during the Carter administration to create a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan. And it was during that time that we provided weapons to the Taliban and to this fledgling organization that we called Al-Qaeda for the purpose of fighting a proxy war against the Russians. And so now to even pretend, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have as our guest today IQ Al Rasooli. We're talking about the insanity of what we have done and are doing in Iraq and how it is a unwinnable, untenable situation that's ultimately going to lead to world war. IQ, I was reading an article, and I will share aspects of the article with you. It's the basic decision is that America can resolve the issue in Iraq by sending more Hellfire missiles. But
sorry, I'm laughing.
Yeah. Just think about that. A Hellfire missile. Let's just say the administration's and America's media's interpretation of Iraq is accurate, which of course it isn't. That the problem in the Anbar province and in Fallujah and all of these cities is that you've got a few Al-Qaeda representatives. Now, they're not, they don't want to talk about them being the Islamic State of Iraq because that title would be too descriptive. But they have this very small number of Al-Qaeda militants that are living among the civilian populations of really nice people in the Anbar province and in Fallujah. And that the way that you're going to weed out the relatively small number of bad guys is to use Hellfire missiles.
Yeah, so you murder 10 civilians for one terrorist.
Allegedly bad guy, or more, you know.
I'm just estimating.
Of course. I love the economics of the whole thing, too. And, you spend a few million dollars for every bad guy that you kill. Perfectly. And of course, when you kill the 10 civilians in the process of perhaps targeting one bad guy, what you end up doing is manufacturing 100 bad guys for everyone that you killed because of the civilians that you killed. It gives the bad guys the opportunity, who survived the attack, gives them the opportunity to recruit more bad guys because you're killing them. And so it's utterly Right. Utterly stupid. This is the thing I wanted to go to. In response to this article, there's a whole bunch of people that made responses, and over the period of time, I'd like you to be able to comment on them, but here's one in particular. And because you came from Iraq, I want to wrestle this issue down because it comes up a lot. This person said, well, I can't argue that the U.S. war was prosecuted by Bush and it was anything other than a complete blunder. You have egregiously omitted the salient facts that would balance your one-sided post, adding among them that Saddam Hussein was a genocidal monster whose corpse count was far higher, probably 300% higher, than even the war and the instability since has caused. Don't those lives count? So there's this myth that Saddam Hussein was not only a genocidal maniac, but that Saddam Hussein killed more people than have died in since the American invasion of Iraq, or that have died from terrorism in Iraq, and that somehow Saddam Hussein was a terrorist, so by taking him out of power, we reduced terrorism there.
So,
yeah, it's absolutely correct.
You should know me by now. I don't need to speak too long.
Yeah, completely. First of all, let's address. I want to share what Wikipedia had to say about the Halabja chemical attack, and I want your comments on it. I've got two or three excerpts to share with you, and I'll do one at a time and then get your comment. Keeping in mind that between 9,000 and 10,000 Iraqis were killed by terrorism this past year. The Halabja chemical attack took place on March 16th, 1988. In other words, way more than a decade before we invaded Iraq. It occurred during, and this is essential, during the Iran-Iraq War. It occurred in the Kurdish city of Halabja in southern Kurdistan, a region of northern Iraq north of Baghdad. The attack was part of the Al-Anfa campaign. The Al-Anfa campaign takes its name from the 8th surah in the Quran called the Spoils of War, which is why it was used as a code name. And by the way, it describes exactly what the campaign was all about. It was part of an Iraqi attempt to repel the Iranian operation Zafar 7. It took place 48 hours after the fall of the town to Iranian forces and to Kurdish guerrillas. The attack killed around 3,000. So this chemical attack that Americans don't want to put into context, that they want to say that was justification for us invading Iraq, an invasion that led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not a million, Iraqis, and has caused a bloodbath of terrorism ever since, was justified because of this chemical attack on this town. But when we get back, let's talk about it in the context of war. How many people died and why they died. We'll be back in a moment with IQ, Al Rasuli. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We are trying to wrestle a horrible myth to the ground. Americans will mostly defend the invasion of Iraq. Now that they can't hang their hat on anything. We didn't nation build. We didn't resolve terrorism. Everything we did in Iraq was counterproductive. So the only thing that Americans and folks around the world will hang their hat on is that Saddam Hussein was a genocidal murderer and that he just randomly gassed his own people because that's what he felt like doing. The truth isn't that at all, is it, IQ? The Kurds were gassed because they were fighting alongside of the Iranians inside of Iraq during the Iran-Iraq war. Isn't that true?
It is true. We're not excusing, by the way. I want people to understand this. Neither you nor I are excusing what Saddam Hussein did. Mm-hmm. But we're putting it in context. By the way, throughout the lifetime of Saddam Hussein's power in Iraq, which is about 30 years, the number who were exterminated, murdered, pillaged by Saddam Hussein paled by at least 10 to 1 after Saddam was overthrown. So 10 to 1.
Yeah, and maybe 100 to 1. Probably closer to 100 to 1. The situation, though, wasn't in the midst of a war. Imagine living in the in England, and you're at war with the Nazis, and Ireland decides that they want to accept German weapons, and that the Irish have decided that since they don't like the British very much, that the British haven't treated them very well, that they will take this opportunity to fight on behalf of the Germans, wielding German weapons against England. What would have England have done?
Exactly the same thing. And
this
the Americans would have done even worse.
Of course. Oh, America would have been even more savage. That is correct.
That's it.
I mean, the fact is that while I have empathy for the Kurds, it's probably the only group in the Islamic world that I actually have empathy for. Of course, I have empathy for the Christians who are bludgeoned there, not because I'm favor Christianity. I'm opposed to it. And not because I like the Kurds. I'm opposed to what they stand for as well. But they are the largest minority in the world, a racial minority with a history and a geographic tie in the world that does not have their own homeland. And so, you know, I can at least empathize with their desire to have their own homeland. But what they did during the Iraq-Iranian war was suicidal. It was absolutely, it was treason. It was suicidal. They received, the war was a stalemate. And so, because the war was a stalemate throughout the South, with Iran having finally invaded but not being able to occupy southern Iraq, Iran decided that it could arm the Kurds and get the Kurds to fight inside of Iraq. These are Iraqi Kurds. Get them to be treasonous and to attack Iraq with Iranian weapons, and that's what this invasion was all about. It was called Zafar 7. It was extraordinarily successful by the Iranians, and it was just north of Baghdad, and had Saddam Hussein not responded harshly, there's a very good chance that he would have lost his country to Iran right then and there. So
I would like Americans to understand something.
Yes.
The Kurdish people constitute about 40 million people. Mm-hmm. 40 million people scattered between Iran, Iraq, Syria, Russia, Turkey, and the Caucasus.
Yes.
The Iranians didn't help the Kurds because they love the Kurds. They hate the Kurds.
Correct.
It's very important Americans understand that. But in the case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that's exactly what they had done.
Right. Which
it
is a bank
done because they love the Kurds.
Of
it
course.
Was done to destabilize Iraq.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah, it would be, you know, it wouldn't be a whole lot different than if we were at war with let's say that France decides to declare war on the United States, and they realize that they don't, that that war was just a stalemate. So them going to Hispanic Americans, and saying, we can't defeat America from outside, but they find a way to give all manner of weapons to Hispanic Americans and say, you go and fight this war against the Caucasians in America. And that is exactly what happened. It's not because the French would have loved the Hispanics. It's, you know, it goes back to Spain. There's no love lost between Spain and France. The same thing is true with the Kurds. But when we take the gassing of that village out of context, and we make it sound like Saddam Hussein was this genocidal madman, as opposed to he was a disgusting dictator. But the fact of the matter is that that attack on that town was because of a grotesque miscalculation by the Kurds.
They miscalculated.
Right, they miscalculated, and they brought it on themselves. And so, yeah, it's a tragedy that women and children were gassed in that community, along with the Kurdish rebels and along with the Iranians. But the Iranian assault that was so successful in Iraq was stopped, and there was the benefit of, at that time, Iran not capturing Iraq and winning that war and gaining control over all of Iraq at that time, which would have been in 1988. Now, as it turns out, in 2010, America gave Iraq to Iran.
We
bludgeoned Iraq's military into submission. We didn't even have to do that. They actually just surrendered when we showed up. But we essentially gave an army to the Shiites in Iraq, which were governed entirely and controlled entirely by the mullahs in Tehran. So what Saddam Hussein thwarted, America enabled.
You know, it's ironic. When the British took over Iraq after World War I, they knew that the majority was Shia.
Right.
But because they knew the majority was Shia, they gave it to the Sunnis to rule Iraq. They knew politically that it was the correct idea.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
Or am I confusing you?
No.
Legally, they should have given the majority rule.
Right.
But they didn't trust the Shia.
Right.
Because the Shia are with Iran.
Correct.
And Britain and Iran were having difficult times. So they allowed the Sunnis to take over.
Yeah, there's part of that, though, that is also interesting. The British maneuvering in the Islamic world following World War I is really what established, to a large degree, the mess that we're enduring now. One of my least favorite countries on earth is Great Britain, because of what they did after World War I. Their legacy before World War I is also condemnable. But in World War I, because a warlord, Saud, who was in league with Wahhab, a religious cleric, that they were the most powerful force amongst the various warring forces in Arabia, because they had successfully melded fundamentalist Islam and weaponry as a warlord and cleric. The British decided that they would pay and arm Saud and Wahhab to fight the Ottoman Empire. And that's the basis of the movie Lawrence of Arabia. And the British, even though they realized they could not trust the Sunnis that were part of this warlord mechanism, they at least developed closer ties with them than they did to the Persians in Iran. And that the British were always outwitted by the Persians. It's just like in the Iran-Iraq War, which was fought to a stalemate, the Iranians had vastly superior generals. Their techniques were vastly superior. The Persian upbringing was superior to what happened, to what the Sunnis were able to amass against them. And the British did not like Iran and felt much more comfortable with the Sunni population. And so you're right. They established a Sunni dictatorship over the Shia majority. And
also, you know, it's ironic when you're talking about the British. People don't realize when they speak, for example, about Israel and Palestine, the mandate that was given to Britain after World War I of the Palestinian territory included, there was no Jordan.
Right. Yeah, it was Jordan.
Jordan was part and parcel of the mandate by the Balfour Declaration to give it to the Jews.
Yeah, and it would have been appropriate because A, the Jews were the only civil people in the region, the only people whose government and whose system of justice and international dealings would have been consistent with what any rational, moral individual would have wanted, while the Muslims were utterly savages. But also, Chaim Weizmann saved the British Empire by inventing a synthetic version of acetone, which enabled England to survive long enough for America to jump in and save England during World War
One. World War One.
And so it was reasonable to give the Jews 1% of the land. As it turned out, the Muslims claimed bloody murder. The Brits recognized that they had just discovered oil on in the midst of those fiefdoms that they had awarded, and they sided with the Muslims against the Jews. British have almost always been grotesquely anti-Semitic, and they reneged on the Balfour Declaration. And had they not done that, there would have been no Holocaust. So Great Britain is largely to blame, and then Great Britain supported the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani and the Grand Ayatollah, I'm mixing my leaders here. They supported the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Mohammad Husseini, and he was the one that devised the plan that is today known as the Holocaust. And because they supported him over the native Jewish population, this conflict has arisen. And so Great Britain has their fingers all over this. America is not the first Western nation to make a mess and make situations worse in the Islamic world. They were preceded by almost a century by Great Britain.
By the British. Yes. Yeah. Wherever Britain left, by the way, I would like Americans to understand this. Whichever country they left it divided. Take an example. In 1947-48, it wasn't just the Arabs and the Jews. It was Pakistan and India. There was no Pakistan. India was gigantic.
Right.
The Muslims refused to have any dealing under control of the Hindus.
Correct.
They split the country into three parts.
Right.
East Pakistan, West Pakistan, and India.
Yeah. And then Bangladesh grew out of the Pakistan aspect because Muslims can't even get along with their fellow Muslims. They left a mess, and we're reaping the hell of that now. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This article, which posted by the Washington Post on how it was so necessary for America to send Apache gunships to Iraq and Hellfire missiles and all other kinds of weaponry, had a number of comments after it. This one is by S.R. Swain in Costa Rica. I'll share it with you, and then, IQ, I'd like you to comment. We also have Larry on the line who is welcome to interject. What is it about these people that they have to keep on killing each other? We need to let them fight their own battles. We sent our sons and daughters over there twice. We've spent an earth-shattering fortune trying to bring these people into the 19th century, much less the 21st. Its hatred appears to be intrinsic to Islam. We cannot fight spiritual battles with drones or technology. Indeed, aside from cordoning these people off the best we can, it's not our fight.
Good God, that is the most perfect comment I have read in the last 10 years. I'm not kidding, honestly.
Yeah.
Quarantine them. I've said that many, many times. You must not allow Muslims to come anywhere to Western societies.
Correct.
Quarantine them. They want Sharia? Let them stay in their country. Why come to Europe? Why go to America?
Right. I agree.
Perfect.
If you
I can't ask with.
Right. You know, America has completely disregarded its own constitution. We have all sorts of limits on gun ownership and possession, and so we have disregarded the Second Amendment. We disregard the First Amendment in terms of a freedom of speech because now we label certain types of speech hateful and prosecute people based upon it, say that we're bullying people. And in terms of the government and the NSA, we have completely abrogated the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And most of America's governance now is the redistribution of wealth, which has no constitutional authority. So recognizing that, one of the provisions of the U.S. Constitution says that there cannot be a hindrance on the practice of religion. But yet if we do not at least put that aside, to deal with Islam, Muslims from inside America will destroy this country.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have to intervene
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
The Constitution talks about religion. Islam is not a religion.
Oh, yeah, it is, my friend.
No. Sorry.
I know.
And I can agree on a million things.
Yeah.
Islam is not a religion. It was never divinely revealed. Even if we believe in a God or not God. It was not divinely revealed, and the God of Islam, Allah, is most certainly not the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham.
Of course. Well, of course, that's... But my friend, no religion was divinely revealed. God hates religion. No religion was divinely revealed.
I'm not arguing you with you.
So,
are discussing what they say.
Islam is a belief system. By the primary definition of religion, and my view is all religions are corrupt. The world would be better off with no religions. That Islam is one of many corrupt religions. It just happens to be the most deadly and the most demonic of all religions. And so I understand your differential is that we in the West have this tendency to view religion as being Christianity, and since Christianity bears nothing in common with Islam, it is unfair to put Islam in the same context as Christianity.
In fact, it is unfair to put Islam in context with any belief system.
Including Hinduism and Buddhism and Confucianism.
We have to disagree on this, and I will not back down. Mm-hmm. It is impossible, logically, morally, constitutionally, to even think of Islam as divinely revealed or in any way, shape, or form a religious belief.
I don't think Yada said it was divinely revealed.
Yeah.
Of course, it was not divinely revealed. It was made up out of whole cloth.
By Muhammad, just as Christianity was made up by Paul and was not divinely revealed, just as Judaism was made up by Rabbi Akiva and was not divinely revealed. There is no religion that was divinely revealed. None. Your point is valid, though. There is that Islam is so vile. It is so utterly stupid. It is so grotesquely immoral that to compare Islam to other religions is to do an injustice to the other religions and to artificially inflate Islam's credibility. Islam is the worst of an extraordinarily bad lot, and it can most adroitly be compared to Nazism. We'll be back in a moment.